Namaste and welcome to Vedanta, the River of Wisdom podcast, a podcast that brings to you the ancient flowing tradition of wisdom that reveals you are pure being having a human experience. I am Swamini B, a Vedanta teacher and a Hindu monk, and your guide by the side. Let us flow, you and I, on the banks of the river of wisdom.
A time-sensitive announcement. Meditation, if it is one more task on my to-do list, it will not help. Meditation, however, if done correctly, can truly transform our relationship with the mind such that it does not bind us but lead us to the truth. Dhyanam, Meditation and the Meditator, my most popular course at the Hindu University of America, is back yet again. The course will include the understanding of the mind in the Vedic tradition, key meditation practices, and an inquiry into the nature of the meditator. Drawing from the Yoga Sutras, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Upanishads, this course will lead the participant to have a guided, suitable and meaningful meditation practice. The course begins on 14th April 2024 and continues every Sunday for 11 weeks at 10 a.m. EST. The link to register is in the description of this episode. I hope to see you there. Prahlada was the youngest of four sons to Hiranyakashipu. He was endowed with Daivi Sampat, qualities which are the wealth and heritage of the Devas. He honored the elders. He was truthful and disciplined. He had his senses under control. He was a good friend to all those who were in pain. He would serve wise people like a sevaka. He would comfort the afflicted like a father would his son, his child. He would behave like a brother with those who were his equals in age. He wasn't egoistic and had equanimity. In short, he was not in any manner fit to be the son of an asura, particularly an asura like Hiranyakashipu. Shukra, the guru of the asuras, had two sons by the name Chanda and Amarka. They had been appointed by Hiranyakashipu to instruct Prahlada in the rules of conduct according to the code of the asuras. This was when Prahlada was 5 years old. So along with Prahlada, other asura children were also made to learn under the tutelage of these gurus. Prahlada learnt the lessons taught by them and also repeated them to please the gurus, but he did not approve of them in his heart. Once Hiranyakashipu took his son on his lap and said, "My child, you have been learning lessons from your gurus for quite some time now. Tell me, what do you think is the best thing in this world?" Prahlada said, "My lord, people I have noticed are always caught up in the web of sorrow. I think it is because of their delusion caused by two things, I and mine, ahankara and mamakara. It is this thinking, which has no grounds in reality, which is the cause of pain, and it is the surest path for the downfall of the jiva. According to me, the best thing in the world is to abandon the home, abandon all one's belongings like one would, like a well which has gone dry, and go to the forest. Take refuge in the feet of Lord Narayana." For a moment, Hiranyakashipu sat speechless. This was the last thing he expected to hear from the lips of a child of 5 years. He should have been angry. But he controlled his anger and laughed. He told himself, "My son is yet a child. He can only repeat what others tell him. What he said are the words of those who love Narayana. This is a favorite theme of theirs. Evidently, the child has been seeing some bhaktas of Narayana. I must not blame my child for talking such nonsense. Hiranyakashipu summoned the two gurus and told them, see that the bhaktas, devotees of that Narayana, like Narada and others, do not come near my child. Do not let him out of your sight. Let him stay with you in your house and learn from you. Hiranyakashipu obviously thought that the bhaktas of the Lord who were wandering around in the guise of ordinary citizens were trying to influence his son. By making Prahlada remain in the house of the gurus, he thought that the child would be saved from quote-unquote contamination from the bhaktas of Narayana. In the home of the gurus, the little boy was placed between the two sons of Shukra. With soft words and in a gentle manner, they asked him, child, how is it that your mind works in a way different from others? You are not like the other Asura child. Please tell us the truth. Are these thoughts your own, or have they been instilled into you by someone else? If so, who is that person? Tell us without fear. We will not punish you. Prahlada said, I do namaha to the Lord who gave me these noble thoughts. Listen to me, my gurus, and consider the words with care. Man in his ignorance thinks of the differences because of I and mine. There is really no such thing. All that is there is given to us by Bhagavan. It is our delusion which makes us think that these are my thoughts and those of others are different. But when Bhagavan decides to bless a person, the person is rid of the duality which robs him of his power of reasoning, which duality involves him in this world of sorrow, which is actually false. Unwise people think that Bhagavan is different and that the person is different. Even great Vedantins have been floundering in this quicksand called ignorance. The Lord who is beyond duality has put these thoughts into my mind and no one else. Like a piece of iron is drawn effortlessly towards a magnet, my mind is drawn to Him on its own accord. The Lord is the pivot around which my thoughts revolve endlessly. I do not know what good actions I have performed in my previous birth that I should have been fortunate enough to have this craving now for Narayana. The gurus lost their temper. One of them said, bring a stick to beat this impertinent boy. He will only bring disgrace and discredit to us. He has an impure mind and he is like fire in the bamboo which will burn the entire family. The only way to bring him to the right path is punishment. In a forest of sandalwood trees, this boy is an alien tree. Narayana, the axe that is bent on destroying this wood, will use the boy as a handle. With threats of punishment, Chanda and Amarka tried to teach Prahlada what they thought was the essential knowledge for an Asura prince. Some time passed. The gurus thought that they had instilled in the child enough fear of punishment and that he had learned all that they had taught him. They thought that they could now present him to his father. And so they took young Prahlada to the presence of Hiranyakashipu. The child fell at the feet of the father and took the dust of his feet on his head. With tears of joy, Hiranyakashipu took the child in his arms and placed him on his lap. He then said, you have learnt so much from your gurus now. Tell me something of what you have learnt and gladden my heart. Prahlada's eyes were thoughtful. He raised them to his father's face and said in a soft voice, Father, I have learnt 9 important lessons which will help me. And what are they? Asked the doting father. The child replied, these are Shravanam, listening to the scriptures and glories of Narayana, Kirtanam, singing the glories, Smarana, remembering and meditating on him. Padasevana, serving. Archana, praising. Vandana, worshipping. Dasya, serving him. Sakhyam, friendship. And Atmanivedana, surrender of the self. Excellent, excellent, said Hiranyakashipu. If you employ even one of these methods to serve me, you will be pleasing me immensely. You have learnt your lessons well. He turned his pleased eyes on the gurus who, in their turn, looked happy. Hiranyakashipu looked at Prahlada with loving eyes and he caressed the young child. Father, said Prahlada, these are the methods of worshipping Narayana. The Lord who is all-pervading can be approached by any one of these nine methods, and that is the lesson I have been fortunate enough to learn. The boy sat silent and the father too, but only for a moment. Hiranyakashipu's anger boiled over and he turned his glowering eyes on the sons of Shukra and said, what is this I hear? Is this the lesson I asked you to teach him? You are trying to ruin my child. I can see that you are not loyal to me. You are taking sides with my enemy and you're teaching my child things which are worthless. I have been deceived by you. The gurus were desperate in their attempt to convince the king of their innocence. They said, my lord, this is not our doing. Please believe us. We did not teach him these things, nor did anyone else to our knowledge. It just comes naturally to him. Please control your anger. Do not ascribe his impertinence to us. We are innocent. Slightly mollified by their obvious sincerity, Hiranyakashipu turned to his son and said, look, my son, they say they did not teach you this nonsense. Then tell me, who taught you these dreadful lessons which are sure to ruin you and me? Unperturbed by the anger of his father, the child looked steadily at Hiranyakashipu and said, it is not given to people like you to know the greatness of Bhagwan. People who are caught up in the possessions of this world, only in the enjoyment of the senses, and just focused on channels of pleasure, though they know that it yields no pleasure, are like blind men being led by other blind men. You perform the karma that is prescribed in the Vedas, and those who ask you to perform them are as ignorant as you are about the truth. You think that the goal of this life is the gratification of your desires and your small, petty ambitions. Yours is indeed a pitiable state. So long as you do not take refuge in wise people who are unattached to the things of the world, your mind will never surrender to the feet of the Lord, who is the only truth. It is only when you tear yourself away from this world and are objective to it that you can set your mind on the Lord. The desire for Bhagwan should come on its own accord. No amount of teaching by a guru nor the company of good people will help you to get into that frame of mind. Unless and until you abandon the thoughts of the worldly things, you cannot learn the lessons I have learnt. Hiranyakashipu was speechless for a long moment. His anger was too intense for words to come out of his lips. He pushed the child rudely from his lap. He called out to his servants and said, take this sinner away from my presence. He should be put to death. He has no affection for his own people. In my presence, he has the audacity to praise my enemy, Narayana, who killed my beloved brother. He sings the praises of Narayana. When I see this inordinate love he has for what he calls Bhagwan, I am sure that this son of mine is none other than my enemy. He has renounced his father at the age of 5. He will not be of any good to me. When a son though born of oneself, behaves like this with his father, it is but right that he should be cast away like a dreaded disease. When a part of the body threatens to hurt the entire body, then the sensible thing will be to amputate that offending part. Only thus the body can be saved. You think of him as my son, but he is my enemy. He is like desire that dwells inside the heart of a sage. If he is not destroyed, he will destroy the dwelling place. This child should be killed as soon as possible. In the presence of the king, his henchmen took up their dreadful javelins and tridents, Trishula, and began to hurt the child. Prahlada stood unmoved. His mind was far away with Bhagwan. A miracle was seen. The weapons were ineffectual in their attempt to wound the child. It was like the futility of a man's attempts to achieve something when he does not have the grace of Bhagwan to bless his attempts. Amazed at this spectacle, Hiranyakashipu stopped the servants and said, "We will try other methods." Prahlada was made to lie on the ground and wild elephants were made to walk on him. The king hoped that he would be crushed to death, but he could not be killed. He was thrown into a pit filled with serpents which stung him, but nothing happened. He was thrown to the ground from the top of a mountain and he got up unhurt. They dug a pit and placed him inside it, covering him with earth. He was not killed. They made him drink poison. They tried to burn him alive, but Prahlada continued to live. The king was desperate since he could not put to death a small, tender, young child of 5. The gurus approached the king, who was sunk in thought, and said, "In course of time, the child may be corrected. We will take him with us and try once again. We will keep other Asura children also, and together they may be able to make him interested in the things which amuse them." The king sent Prahlada once again to the home of the gurus, hoping for the best. Chanda and Amarka gave Prahlada lessons on dharma, artha, and kama. And all the while, his thoughts were on the fourth goal, moksha. During his stay with the gurus, Prahlada was with them bodily, but his mind was far away and never with them. Once the gurus had gone out, and Prahlada was left alone with his playmates. They were all very fond of their gentle, sweet companion who was being ill-treated by his father. Even their gurus were ill-using the prince, and the children loved him all the more for it. Prahlada began to talk to his companions, unsullied as yet by hatred and its associated qualities, which invade the mind only when one grows older. The young boys were attracted by the talk of Prahlada. He said, "Listen to me. We are all blessed with these bodies and these wonderful minds. It will be a crime if we waste them. They are given to us for a purpose. The mind should be set on the Lord. The body should be used only for the worship of Bhagavan. Abandon these asura qualities which are your heritage and replace them with good ones like loving everyone, hating no one, having nothing but daya, compassion towards all living beings. Bhagwan will be very easily pleased and you will reach him effortlessly this way. Think about him, sing his praises, and we will reach him easily." "How do you know?" asked the boys. "You speak so surely as though you know for certain that it is the truth. Tell us, how do you know these things?" "Rishi Narada, a devotee of Narayana, taught me this," said Prahlada. The boys were puzzled. They said, "Ever since we were born, we have been together. We have known no other guru than the ones we have. When did you meet this Narada and learn so much from him?" Prahlada smiled and said, "Long ago, when my father had been to the mountain Mandara to perform tapas, the devas, thinking that he was sure to die on the mountain, began to fight with the Asuras in the kingdom. The Asuras were fleeing from the onslaught. The Devas entered my father's palace and looted it. Indra captured my mother. She was weeping and he paid no heed to her crying. Then, by chance, the sage Narada saw him and said, "Indra, it is not right that you should carry away this woman. Is this the dharma which the Devas observe? Shame on you. Abandon her, please, at once." Indra said, "My lord, you do not understand. I am not carrying her off with bad intentions. She has growing inside her an asura who is even now glowing like fire. I want to keep her with me until the child is born. After killing the newly born child, which, if allowed to live, will harass us, I will release her." Narada said, "You are wrong. The child that is to be born will not harass you. It will not be the cause of further distress to the Devas. On the other hand, it will be a devotee of Narayana and will be the cause of your later happiness and freedom from the father's tyranny." Indra trusted the Rishi and his words. He released my mother and went away. Narada took my mother to his hermitage. He comforted her and said, "You can live in my ashrama until your husband returns from his tapasya. You can be rest assured that you can be happy here." My mother was engaged in serving Rishi Narada during her stay in his ashram. With me in mind, Narada would every day teach her about bhakti, the easiest path by which the Lord can be reached. He would speak to her about the boon of knowledge, the ultimate truth, the realization of the Atma to be none other than Paramatma, the ultimate reality. She heard it all, but it did not stay long in her mind. But I heard it, and I have not forgotten it. Prahlada told them in great detail about the lessons he had learned, and the path of bhakti appealed to the children naturally. Prahlada shared the following. A wise person should practice dharma that is conducive to understanding Bhagwan in his very childhood itself. For birth as a human being alone bestows on us lasting happiness, and such a birth is obtained with great difficulty, and it is transient too. So the only course available for a person in this world is to surrender himself to the feet of Bhagwan Vishnu, because he is the ruler and the very self, the Atma. Just by the connection with a body, suffering and pleasure is obtained by embodied beings in every birth, by force of destiny, without any effort anyway. So no effort for the acquisition of such pleasure should be made all the time, because it leads to a waste of our life. It is said that 100 years is considered the full length of a person's life. Half of it, that is 50 years, is of no use to a person who has not been able to master his mind because of being blinded by ignorance. Out of the remaining 50 years, 20 years elapse in the form of infancy when the fellow remains steeped in ignorance in the form of boyhood, when he remains absorbed in play. Another 20 years roll by in utter helplessness, when his body is in the grip of senility that comes with old age. The rest of his life actually passes away in negligence because the person is attached to his home through insatiable desires. A person whose senses have not been conquered cannot hope to be liberated because he is obsessed with his home and bound to people with very powerful cords of attachment. Who indeed can give up the thirst for wealth which is coveted more than life itself? with his mind obsessed with his family and bound by the affection of his lisping children, how can the person give up the sweet company of the partner, remembering one's children and those beloved daughters living at their father-in-law's place, brothers and sisters, as well as his helpless parents and dwellings that have abundant articles of attractive furniture, his professional achievements, etc., animals and servants? How can he give them up? He keeps on pursuing karma out of greed for some or the other lasting happiness, just like a silkworm which builds a nest in which it gets imprisoned due to its leaving no outlet from it, thinking highly of the pleasures related to sex and the palate. How can one be objective to them? Because his desires remain unsatisfied, and his confusion about the connection between desire and lasting happiness knows no bounds. Fully dependent on his family, the careless person does not see that his life is getting over in the endeavor to maintain the family. And he has still not attained moksha, even though his mind remains affected by the three kinds of dukkha. He never gets sick of them. O asuras, sons of daityas, do not be obsessed always by what you feel good about and the objects of experiences and senses. Take refuge in Bhagavan Narayana. There is not much effort involved in worshipping the Lord because He is the very self of all beings and present everywhere in the world. In all beings, high and low, commencing from the immobile creation that is like the vegetable kingdom and culminating in Brahmaji, the creator in all material products, in the five gross elements, Panchamahabhutas, in the three gunas, Sattva, Rajas, Tamas, all that exists is the one and only imperishable Narayana, though really indescribable and undifferentiated himself. He is looked upon as all-pervading in the form of the subject. And also he pervades the entire form of the objective universe. Bhagwan is the very nature of Ananda with Maya Shakti, which gives rise to this material creation. And so giving up this asura-like thinking, may you show compassion and friendliness, karuna and maitri, to all created beings, whereby you relate to and please Lord Narayana. When Bhagwan is pleased with you expressing your own dharma, what is there that cannot be attained? And what is the use of our worrying over punya which are attained in this world of their own accord through modification of the three gunas? And what is the use of hankering for a goal which is all in the realm of the three gunas? Yes, dharma, artha, kama has been spoken of in the Vedas along with moksha. And so if one is able to offer oneself to Narayana, then your life is fulfilled. I have received this knowledge from Rishi Narada, who has seen the Lord with his own eyes. When the gurus came back, they found that these youngsters were singing the praises of Narayana and the chorus was being led by Prahlada. They put a stop to it and proceeded with their teaching, but they found to their dismay that their words were making absolutely no impression on the children. Young Prahlada had changed their way of thinking. Has Prahlada, the child devotee of Bhagwan Narayana, changed your way of thinking?
You matter. Your life matters. What you do with your life matters. Thank you for listening. If you found this episode helpful and offering insight, I do hope you will consider sharing this with your friends, family, or on social media.
Would you like to receive an email every month that will bring to you more wisdom, more happiness, and more freedom? If the answer is yes, then our monthly newsletter, Arshavidya Bharati, is for you. It has articles on living our traditions, links to podcast episodes, articles and videos published elsewhere in the month, reflections about how Vedanta is changing the life of students, announcements about events and courses, profound Sanskrit sayings, and much, much more. And it's not too long. Do consider checking out this month's issue and also subscribe. The links are in the description of this episode.
The transcript of this podcast is available on discoveratma.com/category/podcast. I would love to hear from you. If you have a request or a reflection, please write to me at swaminiji@discoveratma.com. That's swaminiji@discoveratma.com. As always, thank you for listening, and we meet next week.